More information and tickets available at cap.ucla.edu and kpfk.org.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and on the web at kpfk.org. Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.
If I could put my heart on this page in a way to make it clear, all my joys and all my sadness and pain, if my tears could be set to music, then you may understand how I truly feel, who I am.
Welcome to the Monday, February 2nd, it was a very dramatic pause. Monday, February 2nd, 2026, IMRU radio show. This is Michael Taylor Gray, your host and producer. Yes, if my tears could be set to music, then you may understand how I truly feel, who I am. That was Always and Only You by tonight's guest. I'm going to wait to tell you who it is. She's calling all the way in from New York City. New York City! Yes, it's true. Now, she is Broadway royalty. She's got folk protest lineage and a huge LGBTQ plus following. Yes, queen. Yes, it is Tamara Hayden, and she's on the line right now. Let's bring her on. Hi, Tamara.
Hi, Michael. Oh, how are you doing?
You sound like you're right. You're sitting right across from me. I love it.
I wish I was.
Yeah, I do too. Now, what a beautiful voice.
Oh, thank you so much.
Did you like the lady who sang at the top of the show?
Did I sing?
Did you like that lady who sang at the top of the show?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
oh,
Is she your favorite singer?
Yes.
Yes, of course, Tamara Hayden. Of course you're your favorite singer. Yeah, I want to thank your publicist, one of my favorite people in the world, Harlan Ball, who was also a guest on our show not too long ago.
Oh, that's great. He's a great guy. I mean, he's done so much for so many people over the years.
Yes, he's everybody.
Been a friend since childhood.
And everybody that he represents in the PR realm says that about him. He's more than just somebody who helps you with your career. He's part of your life. He's family.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a good person.
Yes, and speaking of good people, and speaking of family, Tamara Hayden, you grew up in a multi-generational musical family in Colorado. My dream. what did music feel like in your house? Was it comfortable? Was it for comfort, discipline, rebellion, or all the above?
Well, it felt like it just was. You know, I was surrounded by it. I had a grandmother and a great grandmother. My great grandmother Bertie was a one woman band. She'd play, you know, the guitar and a drum, and I never.
Your great grandmother played guitar and drums?
And a drum and a harmonica. She was a one-woman band.
I love
it. Then my grandmother would always sit us down and play piano. And she played the piano like no one's business. Like she would, it looked like she was kneading bread when she played piano. it was voracious, and it was amazing. And she would also play marimba. That was what was amazing. When I went to music school, and people were saying how hard it was to play with three mallets or even two mallets in each hand. Well, my grandmother would do three to four mallets in each hand.
See, this is why women should run the world.
I know, right.
Hello. Right. Yes. Wow.
So that was, you know, just having that, just being surrounded by it was great. And
when did you discover for yourself that bug, that was part of who you were too, you know? That it had bit you hard.
I just knew it. My mom says that I would be out in the backyard swinging. You know, this is like when I was 3 years old, and I'd be singing at the top of my lungs. I don't think I realized that I was singing out loud. I always just felt it was coming from me. But what's funny is one day, you wouldn't hear this very often, but an accordion salesman showed up at our house, and I was like 5 years old. And all I remember him coming in and thinking, well, that's interesting. And he had this squeeze box, and he put it in my hand, and they were amazed because I started playing something. I was playing by ear, and they were like, what?
She's a savant. You know, yes.
Yeah, just weird.
Wow.
So it's a very weird beginning.
But that sounds like you couldn't write that in Hollywood.
An
accordion
I know,
salesman, Colorado, your childhood, comes to the door, knock, 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 hands a five-year-old a squeeze box, and she starts playing naturally.
Right, right. I used to get in trouble for not practicing what was on the page. I'd keep playing things by ear. Mm. And they're like, you have to practice the music. And I was like, you got to understand.
Yeah. You never, never, never squash creativity, ever.
I know. But my parents didn't know. They didn't know.
You know, I played flute and piccolo when I was a kid. And I only took lessons one time. My mom took me to a music store in a mall in Canton, Ohio. And the guy who taught me, I took lessons for like maybe 2 months from this guy. He was blind. My only instructor I ever had to teach me how to play the flute was blind. And I was just amazed by that. So that really inspired me. So now,
that's very cool.
Yeah. Now, you've said your work is rooted in empathy and presence. And you can certainly feel that in the opening song, Always and Only You. Was that something music gave you early on, something that life demanded of you or of you later, this empathy and presence that you have in your music?
I think I learned that over time. Mm-hmm. I mean, Always and Only You is a song I wrote because my first husband passed away, actually. And so I think I learned it after going through that, after, you know, the 9 months of his illness, and he had a brain tumor.
Wow.
And taking care of him and losing him. I think it made me grow up really fast. And then also see other people. Because, you know, when things come easy to you when you're young, you know, you think the world's on your platter, but when you suffer some sort of difficulty, it makes you realize, no, actually I need other people and I need to go deep within, you know, so that I would say that's what really changed me a lot.
What a beautiful tribute to him. How old were you when that happened?
I was 27. We had only been married a year and he collapsed. We were on the road with Les Miserables at the time, and I came home in between shows, and it's one of those things, you know, he had a seizure and was on the ground, and I was like, can you get up? And he's like, and then he couldn't, and so I called down. I said, my husband has fallen down, and he can't get up. And I thought, when would I have ever said those
words? Right, yes, that's right.
You know, it kind of makes you laugh, makes you cry.
Right, exactly.
But, we found out he had a brain tumor, so we went to Denver, and Denver was the next stop on the tour. It was so weird. Like, you can't script this stuff.
No, you can't. That's what life is. No, what year was this? Yeah.
91. Oh, wow. 91, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Isn't that weird?
That,
to me, that
That's
seems
a
like
long
yesterday.
Time ago.
Yeah, but it seems like yesterday. But it's
right.
Really, yeah.
And now everyone just did the math and went,
my God. Hush, hush. My God, I'm old. I thought, I can remember 1974. Yeah. Now, Now we're going to move on to your like Broadway and big moments part of your life here. Now, you've performed opposite legends, Theodore Bickel in Fiddler on the Roof and Ricky Martin in La Vida Loca. I'm sorry, Les Miserables. Did I say La Vida Loca? Yeah. What did each of them teach you about storytelling on stage? And I'm particularly interested in what Ricky Martin taught you.
What's important is what I taught him.
Thank you. See, that's right. Let's get this right now. Queen, please.
I mean, right. I almost don't know if I should say this on
please.
The air, but it just cracked me up that, you know, he walks in and he's gorgeous, you know, and I don't know anything about him. And he lifts up his shirt a little bit to scratch his tummy, and he's got, you know, he's ripped. Oh, my God.
And you want to do your laundry on his stomach.
Down. I'm like, it's not time for laundry.
Right.
But, you know, I played Cosette. He was Marius, and there's just a moment at the wedding where we kiss really quick, and we go into dancing. And he started coming at me, like, with a, you know, a major kiss for TV, and I was like, no tongues.
The fact you have to tell somebody this, right? Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to be embarrassed here.
I did Lemmy and Tenor years ago, and this girl was like 18 or 19, and there's a kissing moment. Full on mouth, wet tongue. It was like getting a sponge bath. I said, what the? I was like, whoa! It had nothing to do with my being gay, but I was like, Jesus, what the hell?
It's a bit much, and it's such a quick moment that was all I was imparting. But I just thought it was funny. I'm like, really? That's the first thing you say to Ricky Martin?
And that's kind of surprising, Ricky. Come on now.
I know. Anyway,
yes.
But he brought a lot to the role. He brought his passion, and that's what I really loved. And then backstage, he taught us the Macarena, which that's all that was important.
What about Menudo? Did you have a crush on Menudo when you were a kid?
No, you know what? I didn't. I'm sorry. Sorry, Ricky. No, I didn't know about Menudo.
Not like Bad Bunny now, who wins the best album. Now Latin music is on the forefront. Back then it was like, Menudo, what?
I know. It's amazing. Gosh.
You're next for album of the year.
Oh, bless you. From your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah, and let's hope Oprah is listening.
Yeah.
What was like working with Theodore Bickel and Fiddler on the Roof? I love that show. Love, love, love that.
Well,
show.
Theo is such he is.
Oh, you call him Theo. Okay.
Theo, he's my, well, everyone in the cast called him Papa. I mean, when I think of Theo, he is like, he's like our papa. He really did embody that. And he was always so lovely. What I loved about working with him, first of all, he's just a force on stage. I mean, you can bump into him and he can take it. And it was just like, you know, he's strong and had a very strong opinion. So I learned a lot from that. But also, he was 80 at the time, and he would do the 8 shows a week. He never missed a show.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, that kind of discipline at that age? Especially on the road.
Right. And then every month or every 6 to 8 weeks, I don't know, he would, you know, put together a meal for us in the evenings after the last show, Sunday night.
And he would sing? Oh, my Lord.
And he would sing for like an hour, hour and a half. I loved it. You know, he sang in like 13 different languages.
Oh, my. Wow.
And, you know, the little girl in me who loved sitting there listening to my grandmother would be on the front row going, yes.
Just wishing you had that squeeze box that you could play along.
I know. Can I play along? Oh, God, he'd be like, down, girl.
Right. Now, you also played the Grand Duchess on tour in Anastasia. And just a mental note for you. I'm a queen, so I outrank you. But
okay then. Okay. Well,
ask
I
Grand
covered
Duchess.
It.
Yes, you did.
I covered her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was covering for Joy Franz. She was amazing too. Another person who never missed a performance. I did get to go on.
Yeah. How do you get a role like that to land in your body and spirit in the moment? Like being a Grand Duchess. Where do you go?
Well, I had to think of grounding down because my energy is very like wispy and up. So I had to, I had to really like drain everything down into the earth and think of roots going deep, you know, and then being like a tree, you know, thinking I've got to think of being really grand and just, it's interesting. But I've played a lot of people of royalty or of royalty.
Kind of like Maggie heritage. Smith.
It's just weird.
In Downton Abbey, very grounded.
Right. Yeah. It has to be slow down and ground in.
Now, speaking, because you mentioned you've done a lot of tours. Now, Broadway and touring can be brutal. So what's that? She goes, oh, that's under an annoying laugh right there.
Do it when you're young.
That's right. Well, too late. No, what's the part of what's the part of that life that audiences never see but should, and that you can talk about on air?
Well, I always, you know, if my cast mates are listening, they know I always like to do goofy things off stage, but yeah. You know, my off stage show is always more goofy than the on stage, because I always play the straight and narrow people, and so I got into big trouble hanging upside down or swinging from the rafters. But in Fiddler, the stage manager started to there was a place where I had to run off stage really fast, and so he started putting like a base, like the third base, and I'd be sliding into home, you know, run off stage and start sliding. Well, I say the stage manager, but I mean the assistant stage manager, because then one day I really had a good slide into home, and the stage manager said, "Camera,
must you do Miss that Hayden. Often?" Did you get so docked?
Thing about, you know, like touring with Les Mis, we were in the bus and truck. That's harder than the other tours, because you're touring on your day off. So there's no day off. I mean, so
that's
you just
a huge
have to
cast.
Oh, yeah. 38 people. And I was doing the long version. Right now, the version that's out there, they've taken off a half hour.
Wow.
So, yeah. Mm. You just have to take care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, years and years ago, I lived in Columbus, Ohio, and I lived in this housing that had all the actors that would come in that were doing the bus and truck tours. And I learned so much about the life of what it was like to be on the road, you know. So, and you see people outside of them being on stage, and it's, you know, it's glamorous when you're seeing it, but, you know, it's a lot of work. And like you
it's
said, you really
lot
have to
work.
Take care of yourself.
Yeah, but I loved it. I mean, that's the part. You have to have the right personality to want to be in a different place all the time. And you just learn, like, I just got to be good at seeing as you're driving into town going, okay, there's food. That's nice. Okay, I know what to do.
You know, Food is good.
Yeah. Choosing the places that are, you know, healthy, and then, you know, just, and then you just have to pick and choose, like, where you can do extra things. Like when I was on Anastasia, we had a little extra time, and I started going to take classes about glass blowing.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's
very harsh.
A couple of things, but it was great. Like that was like, you don't always get to do those things when you're just home all the time.
Yeah. So, and glass blowing, they have this thing called a glory hole. I'm just going to let that sit.
Okay. I will not touch that.
Okay. I'm just saying. Okay. So, now
we're
if you're just,
new.
I know, if you're, please, when my friends were doing some extracurricular activities back in Ohio for one of my high school reunions, and one of the activities for the second day of our reunion was cornholing. Sorry, I'm mixing my metaphors. Yes, teabagging is a whole other thing. Yeah. Wow. Thanks for tuning in. If you're just tuning in, this is IMRU. You're not surprised. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, cornholing. And I'm like, Sharon, that was one of our class officers. I said, are you doing that just for me? She didn't get it. That's okay. It's okay, Sharon. We'll let that slide. Just like you did in the home plate backstage. So now,
I know.
You did just a couple of days ago, on January 30th, you had a sold-out concert. You did.
Yes.
Of classic folk
so...
songs, Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, alongside brand new work, responding to what's going on in the world right now. Now, why do you think that folk music still feels so necessary in 2026? Tamara Hayden.
Oh, difficult question. Well, yes. I mean, because it's about human nature. It's about human, I don't know. See, I'm floundering here.
But you're Broadway royalty. You can flounder all you want.
I know. Well, there's no jazz hands. It's all about...
it's all spirit fingers. Just
no, you know what? I feel like with this show, I feel like I'm on a mission.
Yeah.
Because what I've heard is that it's important right now because people are feeling, you know, troubled by what's happening. And it's important to get together and sing together. And yeah. And the music that I've got some songs that I felt very strongly that I needed to put in the show. One that's about what's happening in the Ukraine, one that's about immigration, you know, immigrants who are just looking for a better life. And I feel like it's not didactic. It's not like saying you have to think this way, but to say just put yourself in the shoes of someone else.
Oh, yeah.
Just have empathy for what's happening. And God forbid this should happen to you.
You know? They came for so-and-so, and I said nothing.
Right.
Right.
And so,
mm-hmm.
And I have to say, the most beautiful thing is I did end the concert with To Dream the Impossible Dream, so
okay.
I brought a little bit of Broadway in there.
Absolutely.
But and then had everyone sing We Shall Overcome, and there wasn't a dry eye. I mean, we're all just crying through this, and it was
Well, look at
beautiful.
Bruce Springsteen at 75.
Oh,
Bruce Springsteen with his new song, you know, talking about what's going on in Minnesota right now.
Right, right. And just hearing his passion coming through that song is mm-hmm. really moving. No, it's important right now. I think all the singers, the actors, writers have to get in there and connect.
The storytellers. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when you sing those legacy protest songs today, do they feel prophetic or just frustratingly unresolved to you?
Well, it's weird. I think they sound a little prophetic, which is interesting because, like, I decided to put the times they are changing mm-hmm. in the show.
Uh-huh.
And when I first learned that, I learned that song like 10 years ago, and I just, the word, I could never memorize it. It was weird. I thought, I don't know why I can't memorize this song. But I brought it back out, and I memorized it in a second because it totally feels right now.
You connected to it.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, oh, I could finally put this song in the show.
And, you know, Bob Dylan, you know, one of our greatest poets that we've known in music.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he just had a knack at it. Even if he didn't completely believe it at the time, or, you know, it's like he did it for everyone else. He just
yeah.
was a good poet. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Now, your new songs respond directly to what we're living through. Was there a specific moment that pushed you to write them?
Oh, yeah. Well, when I wrote, it was probably at the beginning of when Russia invaded Ukraine, it was probably 2 weeks after that. I co-wrote that with a gentleman in the UK, Robert Freemantle. And he's a really good poet. And just the two of us together, I just feel like it's a good song. It's called Is It Enough? And it's sort of like saying, am I doing enough? Is it enough to send thoughts and prayers? Is it enough to write a song? Is it enough? And it never feels like enough. But quite frankly, if we do something, it is.
Well, now more than ever, we have to do something. We can't just think about something. Yes.
Correct. Correct.
No, you have, as I mentioned earlier in the show, you have a huge LGBTQ plus fan base. Yes, Queen. I should say, yes, Grand Duchess. When did you first realize queer audiences were really connecting to your work?
Well, they teach you in this industry to find out who your audience is.
Yeah.
And I started, you know, looking at who was really responding to me. And quite frankly, it was like, well, older lesbians and older men, for one thing.
Yay!
But, and I think
gay
it was
men,
just,
honey,
yeah.
gay men.
I know, it's just, and I think it's just that, yeah. you know, coming from a real place,
mm-hmm.
people were just, I guess what I was writing about, which was very, you know, vulnerable for me, helped other people feel that too. I mean, I have a fan in Germany who said, I play your CD all the time, and it's like you're singing my story. And I'm like,
yeah.
That's so interesting.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, it is. It really is amazing. Actually.
Yeah, I mean, you do it because it's a healing process for yourself as well.
Right.
But it's something that you want to share because you know that you can connect
right.
with somebody else and somebody else
right.
will, it'll help them along that journey as well. And I think that's so important. you know, our artists, our storytellers. It's so important that we keep producing and putting music out and our voices are still heard. That's why I'm so glad to have you on the show tonight. You know, we're almost to the end of our show, if you can believe it or not.
That's crazy.
It is quick, but we got a little bit of more time. Now, folk cabaret and musical theater have long been queer lifelines. What do you think, why do you think your music resonates so deeply with our listeners, with our LGBTQ plus listeners? It's like what we just talked about. There's that universality there.
I think so. And also, mm-hmm. I don't know. To tell you the truth.
Do you have common themes in what you've been dealing with in your music? What were some of the themes?
Insecurities.
Insecurities
of just feeling like not enough.
Yeah.
Of feeling broken, like I'll never be able to say the right things. I mean, it was scary to put these songs in front of my first band when we were doing the album and have it mirrored back like, no, this is good.
Yeah.
Camera. You know, I was like, oh, okay, thank you. You know, just shaking. And even Friday night, I sang some new songs. I thought, I don't know how they're going to go over. You don't know that you know. But
you just sing from your heart. You just sing from your heart.
Right.
I mean, I'd never, you know, we're new to each other, you know, and I'm so glad to have met you, even if it's just through the airwaves right now.
But listening to
that song today, I was listening through a bunch of your music today, and that one just really, it just spoke to me. There was a yearning and a cry in there. And that lyric, I'll say it one more time. If my tears could be set to music, then you may understand how I truly feel, who I am. That's music.
Yeah,
that's
it's
music.
Sort of like...
That's the healing power of it.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came right out of me. That's the thing. It's interesting writing songs. There's some songs that have a very hard birth and you're just going over and over and trying to nip and tuck it, just write. And then there's some that just pour out of you, and that was one that just poured out of the situation.
Don't you love that?
Wow.
But you're right.
Yeah, I love it when they just pour out.
Yes, it's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, I'm working on a musical, and I remember walking my neighbor's dog one day, and I had this idea for a song for the show. And by the time I walked to the park and back, I had everything recorded on my phone.
Oh, I love that. Yes, the recorder on the phone is the best friend.
Oh, you know, that's right.
Songwriter.
Yeah. And speaking of recording, you're heading to the studio to record new songs for a spring release. Now, how is this music different from what you've released before?
I want this one to be just with my guitar. So it's very vulnerable.
Acoustic.
Yeah, I'm going to do an acoustic version of it. I may fill them out later, but I guess that's just where I am right now. I designed this show so I could just take my guitar and go anywhere and just show up.
You're a guitar. We're going to call it a guitar.
A guitar.
It's very fancy. It's a high-end guitar. A guitar.
Well, thank you. I just made that up.
Yes, you did. Because you're Broadway royalty. You can do whatever you want.
That's right. Snap, snap, snap.
That's right. As I bow. Yes. No, your personal mantra is peace, love, and hilarity, which I love.
And hilarity.
Wah! Now, in times
my God.
Yeah, in times like these, how do you actually hold on to the hilarity part? Please tell me how.
I think that my coping skill is hilarity. I think when I'm the funniest is when I'm dealing with the worst. That's what I've noticed. But I just feel like we have to laugh. We have to have fun. We have to do things. And otherwise, we'll be miserable right now. This is a particularly hard time. And so so in my show, I had them do a Mad Lib sing-along, which turned out pretty funny. You put ridiculous words in, fill in.
Yes.
And they sang along. They came along with me. And I was like, you know, you just have to. I hear some music.
Oh.
Who is it?
I hear a songbird. I hear a songbird. Is that the Grand Duchess? Could it be?
Well, yes. She would sing it an octave lower.
Wow, shame on her. Because she's grounded. She's grounded. Yes. Well, Tamara Hayden, thank you so much for coming on tonight and sharing your art, sharing your song, sharing your heart.
Bless you.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back. And I'm already in love with you. Yes, I'm a gay man, but I am allowed to be in love with you.
That's fine. I don't mind it love is love, baby.
That's right. All us old gays and lesbians, we're going to follow you around forever.
Take good care. Everybody out there, take good care.
Where can we follow you on social media before we go?
You spell my name correctly, you'll find me. TamraHayden. I'm on Instagram and Facebook and then every streaming platform out there.
You go, girl. Well, I can't wait to meet you in person someday. And I just want to thank you for coming onto the show tonight on IMRU. I'm Michael Taylor Gray, your host and producer here. We are heard all over the Southland here in Los Angeles and beyond. And everywhere online, just like Tamra Hayden. We're on all the social media platforms. So check us out, IMRU. And thank you, KPFK, and everybody here at the station. Thank you, Carlos, our board op. I'm going to give a special shout-out to a gentleman that used to work here that has gone on to greener pastures, and I wish him all the best. Our Wendell Handy, thank you for your time.